Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for the Christophers, and according to the Centers for Disease Control, 1 in 4 teens in this country suffer from clinical depression, and 1 in 12 try to kill themselves. My guest today will be Luke Maxwell, and he knows that firsthand because he attempted suicide at age 16. Now he is working to help others like himself get the hope, faith, healing, and treatment they need. And that's what Luke and I will be talking about today, so stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi. When he was 16 years old, Luke Maxwell crashed his family's van into an oncoming vehicle because he wanted to kill himself after 4 years of experiencing undiagnosed clinical depression. Miraculously, both Luke and the driver of the car he hit survived. Luke found healing through the support of his doctors, his family, and his Catholic faith, and now he has made it his mission to bring hope to other teens who might be going through the same kinds of problems he had. To share his story, I'm happy to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Luke Maxwell. Luke, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, I gave a brief version of your story in my introduction, but I want to flesh out some of the details. So let's go back to the days and the months before you attempted suicide. How did these feelings of depression manifest themselves in your life? Was it sudden or was it gradual?
It was definitely a gradual process.
Mm-hmm.
The feelings started around 12.
Okay.
And then it wasn't very serious, and then it progressed very slowly, very gradually until I was 16, until I attempted. So I had many of the common symptoms. I was sad, mm-hmm. Which many people know, which when it comes to depression, but I was also being unable to sleep, which as I've done more research, as I've talked to more people, that's actually an extremely common symptom. Is being unable to sleep at night.
Okay.
I have a lack of energy. I lost my faith. And I felt that nobody loved me. Mm. And I thought that nobody cared. And that even if, and I thought that even if someone could help me, which I thought they couldn't, they wouldn't want to.
Wow.
And that's what I believe. And that's the thing, is I had a good family, had a good upbringing, very Catholic. I was altar serving ever since I was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't stop this depression from coming over me. And later I learned that I inherited this medical disease from my genetics.
Ah.
So this is a genetic disease that I inherited.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you mentioned before that you had lost your faith. What role had your Catholic faith played in your life up to that point?
I was altar serving. I loved saying the rosary with my family every night.
Mm-hmm.
I just really loved praying, being there with God, and living every aspect of my faith. I just really enjoyed it. And then my perspective started shifting, and I thought, you know, nobody loves me. God doesn't love me. If there was a God, he wouldn't let this happen to me.
Mm.
I'm alone. Nobody cares. And then, of course, what depression does, since it is a mental illness, is that what mental illness does is it shifts that perspective through different chemical imbalances and other psychological effects.
Yeah.
And we can see this in extreme cases such as schizophrenia, where you'll hear voices, you'll see things that aren't there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the same thing with depression,
mm-hmm.
is that I believe things that weren't true.
Right.
So my logic was twisted. My worldview, it was twisted into a reality that wasn't actually real.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the biggest dangers with depression, is that many people can't understand it if they've never gone through it themselves.
Yeah.
Because they think, what are you talking about? Nobody loves you. What are you talking about? We love you. We have tons of friends. Why are you saying that you're too fat or that you're not pretty or that you're hopeless?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why are you saying that? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Whereas in the person's mind is that is their reality.
Yeah. I'm talking to Luke Maxwell. He started a website called YouCan'tBeErased.com because he attempted suicide at age 16 due to a clinical depression. And let's, you know, touch on that a little bit, because what you're talking about here is clinical depression as opposed to somebody who's just feeling sad or depressed about something that happens in their life and that kind of goes away generally, right?
Exactly. There is a difference between feeling sad and being clinically depressed. And, of course, there are different levels of depression. I was diagnosed with major depressive disorder, which is the highest level you can be diagnosed with. But, of course, there's minor depression. Mm-hmm. But if untreated, this minor depression can turn it into this major depression.
Yeah.
So it's there's no strict saying this is strictly just feeling sad right now. This is just strictly maybe minor depression or depression symptoms. So to clarify, you can be diagnosed with major depression. There is a clear difference, but it is on a spectrum.
Yeah.
So you could be in that iffy middle saying, well, you might be depressed. You might just be feeling sad because this happened in your life. So what I always say in that situation is that if you're experiencing different mental health challenges, such as let's say you're sad, well, that's not worry. And say, well, we're not sure if you're depressed or not, so we're not going to do anything. But instead saying, what can we do to help this sadness? And instead focusing on the symptom and not necessarily the disease.
Right.
Because
right.
if we focus too much on the disease, we can say, okay, we are depressed. I have depression. I am depressed. Oh, well. Right? That's my life.
Yeah.
I like to instead focus more on the symptoms and say, okay, I can't sleep at night. What can I do about that? I'm feeling sad. What can I do about that? And focusing instead on a diagnosis and instead focusing on actions to overcome the challenges you're experiencing.
Right, right. Were you able did you deliberately hide the symptoms that you were experiencing, your feelings from your family, from your schoolmates? Did you put on a happy face or did the symptoms come out and people just didn't know what to make of them?
I hid them. And that's the other big danger about mental illness is that there's such a huge stigma is that I didn't understand. I was never taught about depression, mental illness anywhere. And so I didn't understand what I was going through. And I thought there's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
And I thought I'm going to get in a bunch of trouble. I'm going to be yelled at if I ever share this. So I can't share this with anybody because I'll be outcasted. And any hope that I left of being loved, accepted, of having a future, that tiny hope that I had would be gone.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I hit it. And, of course, I had symptoms that were recognizable, such as reading in my room for hours and hours every day, just spending every second I could alone in my room, reading the same books over and over and over again. And that was my main way of self-medicating, of escaping my pain that I was in, because I didn't want to be in this world anymore. I did have some anger outbursts, especially with my siblings, although, again, with a teenager, that's kind of normal. And any parent listening right now would say, well, every kid I've ever had has got angry at their siblings. So I think one of the biggest symptoms, and also not being able to sleep. So those were the two main symptoms that were recognizable.
Yeah.
Was not being able to sleep and then isolating myself in my room.
Okay.
And really what most parents ask next is, well, if I can't see it, how am I going to do anything about it? And that's where education of your kids comes in. And like I say that just as you give your kids the talk, you know, this is just another talk to give to help them be healthy and happy human beings.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just education about mental illness, what to do. Because my parents tell all of us now is that if you're ever feeling depressed, you're feeling like this and listing the symptoms, talk to us. We're not going to get you in trouble.
Yeah.
We're not going to punish you.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to yell at you. We're going to maybe take you to a doctor, maybe take you to a therapist. Maybe you'll have to take medication, but we're going to help you overcome this so you can be happy again.
Yeah, yeah. No, I see the importance of the education part, because when you said before, you know, it started at age 12, I have a feeling, you know, some adults would hear that with not being aware of the warning signs and everything and say, well, what does a 12-year-old have to be depressed about? But it's not really that kind of problem. So what you're doing is raising awareness and education really is crucial to the process.
Exactly. And Tony, let me tell you, the highest number of people who reach out to me through mm-hmm. messaging emails is middle schoolers, 12 and 13-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
That's the highest percentage. I would say maybe 60% of all the people who contact me are middle schoolers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, I mean, I know people who have been suffering from severe mental illness
mm-hmm.
Since they were six. And that's not uncommon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so what Luke is doing is raising awareness. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up, and I'm talking to Luke Maxwell about his ministry, YouCan'tBeErased.com. That's the letter U, YouCan'tBeErased.com. He's talking about the mental illness and depression that led him to attempt suicide at age 16. So take me back to that day. What happened, you know, that made you decide to kill yourself?
So I had been planning my death for a while, a year or two. And I just never did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just never did it. I kept on going day after day. But finally, that day, it was December 3rd, 2012, I woke up and I just thought, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. This is it. This is going to be the day. Mm-hmm. And I told myself that many, many times before. But this day, what happened was, my tour was to clean out our big 12-seater van.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is it. So I asked my mom for the keys. I said, so I could listen to the radio, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I pretended to clean the car for a couple of minutes. And then I decided, this is it. I have to do this. I can't continue living this way. Because I believe that there was no hope for my life.
Yeah.
I thought that I was no skills, no talents. Nobody loved me. Nobody wanted me. And I thought, I don't want to be here. Nobody else wants me to be here. There's no point in going on because I can't accomplish anything in my life. So why stay?
Mm-hmm.
Why keep on living?
Yeah.
And then so I jumped in the driver's seat. I turned on the ignition, backed out of the driveway, and then sped down the road for about half a mile. I approached a stop sign. I turned straight through it without stopping. And that's when I saw the white SUV coming in the opposite direction. It was the only car on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And all I saw was, this is how I'm going to end my pain. This is how it's going to be over. I'm mm-hmm. finally going to be free.
Mm-hmm.
And so I accelerated and going about 60 miles per hour, wearing no seatbelt, I swerved and slammed head on into the oncoming vehicle.
Wow.
I was in shock.
Mm-hmm.
I was still in my seat.
Okay.
And I barely remember climbing out of the broken driver seat side window.
Mm-hmm.
And I just ran down the road in shock.
Wow.
And I thought, and a million thoughts running through my head. But the number one thing I realized was that my worst nightmare had come true, is that I had survived. And I thought this was the absolute worst thing that could possibly happen to me. Because now everyone would know. I knew I couldn't keep this secret anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so to make a long story short, I was arrested because I told them I did it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I was taken to the hospital. I was given a CT scan there. And when that results for that scan came back, we found that out of that 60-mile-per-hour crash, wearing those seatbelts, I survived completely unharmed.
Wow.
All I had was a little scratch on my arm. I don't even have a scar.
Unbelievable.
And then, so it was a miracle I survived.
Mm-hmm.
There's absolutely no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
And what followed was just the healing.
Yeah.
And my parents, you know, saying that to me, what I was talking about earlier, is telling me how much they love me, that I could tell them anything, that they're going to help me get better. And then we just started doing whatever we could to heal.
Yeah. So they did diagnose you then with mental illness and depression in the aftermath of the accident?
Yes. So I was transferred to a mental facility on a 72-hour hold.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they diagnosed me with major depressive disorder. And they put me on medication there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was there for 3 days. They released me. And then I went to see a therapist directly afterwards and saw him for 2 times a week for the next few months.
Okay. And that's what led you down the road to the real healing you achieved.
Exactly. And there's so many other things that we did. I actually have an ebook that I wrote that's on my website
mm-hmm.
that just details everything that I did to heal.
Yeah.
Because that's the most common question I'm asked is that, what did you do? Because we've been suffering for so long. Especially with parents, you know, I'm trying to help my kid,
mm-hmm.
but it hasn't been working. What did you do? And so I finally said, I have to just compile a list.
Sure.
And
okay.
Just detail it. So that's there. But I mean, just practical stuff as such as exercising.
Yeah.
In some people, I've been reading lots of studies on how exercise can actually be as effective as medication.
Okay.
In some people when it comes to depression.
Mm-hmm.
So some exercise, trying to set a sleep cycle, watching my diet, going to therapy, taking medication. And then, of course, as time progressed, really rekindling my spiritual life.
Sure.
And spending more time in prayer, the sacraments, and all of that. And it was a snowball.
Yeah.
Because you'd heal one factor and get a little bit better and then be easier to heal the other symptoms that are going on.
Yeah. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Luke Maxwell about his ministry, YouCan'tBeErased.com. That's the letter U, can'tBeErased.com. We're talking about his attempted suicide at age 16, his diagnosis with clinical depression. And to me, one of the most remarkable parts of your story, in addition to your survival, is that Lenny Ross, the man you hit and could have killed in the car accident, he was willing to forgive you. So I'm curious, what was that? What went into apologizing to him and talking to him? Because I imagine that must have been very awkward or uneasy, to say the least, at first.
It was very, I mean, that was one of the most amazing days of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually just published a video on my YouTube channel about this. I was being prosecuted because I was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, side story, it was the prosecuting DA.
Mm-hmm.
Who was supposed to be, you know, punishing me to the maximum that she could.
Yeah.
We met with her. I told her what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then she ended up fighting for me.
Wow.
Instead of against me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason I'm here today. So through her, we told her after, you know, she said, okay, I want to help you in all of these court battles. And we said, well, we really want to meet with a man that I hit
mm-hmm.
because, you know, we want to apologize to him. We want to talk to him. And because I felt really bad about it. Obviously I did something very bad.
Mm-hmm.
I felt really guilty.
Yeah.
So through her, we reached out to each other. We set up a meeting at a coffee shop, and that was about 8 months after the crash.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came, I gave him a big hug. And all I could say was, I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just kind of stepped back, looked at me, and said, that's all I wanted to hear.
Wow.
And that moment I realized, wait, he just forgave me.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat and talked for like a few hours after that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is about him, his life, getting to know him. And now he's fighting for me.
Wow.
He has my back in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, and that's why I'm such a strong advocate for forgiveness, for real, true forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he hadn't forgave me,
mm-hmm.
Who knows where I would be right now?
Yeah.
Is that it's with all of this that I was facing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I now have an ally. And later I learned, he actually told me just recently
mm-hmm.
that lying in the hospital bed that night mm-hmm. of the crash, he forgave me of
wow.
everything that I'd done to him.
That is incredible. That is a miracle in and of itself, yeah.
It is. And that just shows you what a fantastic man he is.
Mm-hmm.
And what a fantastic people we could all be just by the simple act of true forgiveness.
Yeah. You know, I know Pope Francis talks about mercy all the time. And I think sometimes people get a little tired of it. They think it's kind of namby-pamby, a little too, you know, a little too nice. But really, what your story is showing is that, you know, mercy had so much more of a life-changing effect than judgment or condemnation would have. Because, you know, who knows how you would have responded had that been his. So what do you think just now of the power of mercy in people's lives?
It's amazing. And exactly what you just said is perfectly true, that if I had received judgment and I was put in jail, mm-hmm. which they were trying to send me to juvie because I was 16 at the time,
mm-hmm.
for attempted murder.
Yeah.
If that had happened, I can almost guarantee you there would be 12 teenagers dead right now because I wasn't there. Because I wouldn't have been there to reach out to them and help them get help.
Okay.
So, I mean, that just exactly. So that, I mean, and that also goes, as, you know, why does God allow bad things to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing is that there'd be so many teens depressed, more suicidal, more hopeless, or even possibly dead right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Had I not been there to speak to them and convince them that there is hope.
Well, when you do talk to teens, what is the response you get? Do they open up to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course, there are always times where someone really doesn't want to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll get this all the time. Someone will maybe send me a message through Instagram or Facebook and say, hey, what's up? And I'll just be like, okay, I know what you're trying to get at. But, you know, I'll play the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say, you know, what's up? And then we'll talk, you know, just like small talk for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll usually, if they don't bring it up, I'll say, hey, is there anything I can help you with?
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling? Are you feeling okay? And I'll see where it goes. But it's been something that shocked me because I've never thought of myself this way. But so many times teens have told me, you know, I just felt that I could talk to you because I felt that I could trust you.
Okay.
And I felt that you were like the one person that I could trust.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that just comes from being open and unashamed.
Yeah.
Of what's happened in my life.
Yeah.
Is that I'm completely open about everything in my life. I mean, you could ask me any question right now.
Mm-hmm.
I would answer completely truthfully, whether you want to know or not. I would still answer completely truthfully. And that's another part of my mission is that, hey, this is real life. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give you a fantasy world where you read a motivational quote on Facebook and all your problems go away. That's not the world I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you real life.
Yeah.
And then so that's why I'm so open about my story and everything that's happened to me.
Well, how do you advise young people to deal with feelings of depression?
The first thing I always recommend is talking to their parents.
Okay.
That's one of the hardest things that I could have them do. And because I know I'm awful at it. And you could actually, you know, ask my mom right now, how is Luke when it comes to talking about his feelings? And she'll say, oh, he's terrible. He's terrible at it. Whereas to the world on Sirius Radio, I'm perfectly okay. So when it comes to talking to parents, I recognize it's a very hard thing for many teens to do.
Mm-hmm.
Some have no problem with it,
mm-hmm.
but many have reservations.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to something like mental illness, where they feel ashamed and guilty for even having this disease.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I always recommend is talking to parents. There's a couple of ways that if you're having trouble actually just sitting down and talking with them, I have a letter on my website that teens can, you know, use as a rough template to just print out, put it somewhere where their parents will find it, and then that will start the conversation. I've actually had quite a few people do that, and then now they're getting help because they use that letter. So so that's why I keep it, because it does work. And I say, look, even if it comes to you can only text them that you're feeling sad, depressed, suicidal, do that because you don't want to keep a secret because depression feeds on secrets.
Yeah. And it's just that initial step.
A destructive initial step of getting the word out.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm all about first steps. And then, of course, I say, you know, there's a bunch of ways that I healed. What do you do that helps you be happy, or what do you do to cope with these feelings? Mm-hmm. And then some people say like, oh, I like playing the guitar. And I'll say, okay, you know, try to play the guitar more if you haven't been playing it lately.
Yeah.
Or maybe go for a run today. Can you go for a run right now? Mm-hmm. I've done that several times and say, hey, can you go for a run right now? And of course, I'm in sunny Southern California right now. And some people say, it's snowing outside. And I'll go, oh, right. Not right. Sun mm-hmm. isn't everywhere.
Right.
So it's just different. And then it's just a conversation. Mm-hmm. And I spend a lot of my time communicating with these teens, with these parents, with anybody else who messages me, because that's just one essential part of everything that I do. And I'll spend time just communicating back and forth and saying, okay, what about this? Or how do you feel about this? But ultimately what it comes to is that I say, look, you need to talk to your parents, you need to see a therapist, and then talk to your therapist or your doctor about taking medication.
Okay.
And those are the three essential things that you have to do.
Yeah. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up, and I've been talking with Luke Maxwell, who is really doing a life-saving ministry with his website, youcan'tbeerased.com. Again, that's the letter U, can'tbeerased.com. He is taking the pain he experienced when he attempted suicide at age 16. He had endured years of clinical depression without knowing it, without being diagnosed with it. And now he is lighting that candle instead of cursing the darkness. He is reaching out to others who are maybe in the same kind of pain he was in, and he's trying to help them through it so they don't make the same choices he did at that time. He was blessed enough to survive his suicide attempt, to have the man who he hit in his car forgive him. These are really miracles of mercy, miracles of God's mercy and man exhibiting God's mercy. So really, if you're listening today, if you have teenagers or middle school kids and you're concerned about their maybe possible of going through depression, check out Luke's website, youcan'tbeerased.com. Luke, thanks so much for sharing your story and for all you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony.
Now, before we end today's show, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
The grace of God has a way of sneaking up on us. And if we're not paying attention, it might even slip right past us. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called Opening Yourself to God's Grace. It will help you become more aware of the moments in your life when God makes his presence known in unexpected ways. Moments that can draw beauty out of brokenness and allow you to experience the depths of his love. To request your free copy of Opening Yourself to God's Grace, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. That's 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.